Another victory. It cost the Confederacy Jackson, who was shot down by his own men on the evening of May the 2nd, but it's still a great victory. Another bloody victory. 13,000 Confederate casualties, nearly. About 17,000 Union casualties. In other words, a much higher proportion of Lee's army is killed or wounded or captured at Chancellorsville than of Hooker's army. But it's a victory seemingly against the odds, again with a large aggressive component that thrills Confederates behind the lines. Here's Lee is doing again what they want their generals to do. I know that I'm hammering this point hard, but we can't overstate it. Lee's generalship suits the temper and expectations of the Confederate people almost exactly, and that is extremely important in a democracy at war. He is a perfect fit. His behavior and the expectations of the people he and his army are representing in the field. There was an epiphany, a special epiphany, for both Lee and his men on May 3rd at Chancellorsville. There are always these moments when something important happens. On the morning of May 3rd, after very heavy fighting, two parts of Lee's army had been divided. The men fought their way together. Enormously costly fighting on the morning of May 3rd, as heavy as any of the days at Gettysburg, for example. They fought together in this wilderness of Spotsylvania, this forest. They came into a clearing where Hooker had had his headquarters. Hooker had retreated. The headquarters was on fire. The woods were on fire around this clearing, and the two wings of Lee's army emerged into the clearing and reunited. And just as the wings of the army came together, Lee rode into the midst of his men. And there was an enormous and spontaneous outburst of emotion on the part of the soldiers, shouting and brandishing their muskets and throwing their hats. And Lee stood there amidst the men, taking in this scene and understanding that they had, through very hard fighting, given him a victory. And they understood that he somehow had put them in a position to achieve this victory against the odds. It cemented, I believe, the bond between Lee and his men. He came away from there believing his infantry could do anything. We'll talk about what that meant at Gettysburg. And I think the men came away believing that whatever Lee asked them to do, they could do. A Georgian shortly after this time said this about Lee. He said, "Wherever he leads, we will follow. Whatever he says to do can and must be done." Language is inadequate to convey the idea of the supreme confidence this army reposes in its great and good leader. The impact of Chancellorsville, Confederate morale goes up, Abraham Lincoln anguished again, yet again. Lincoln has put his big army into the field with high expectations, and they are defeated. An anguished Lincoln responded when he realized that Hooker had failed. He said, my God, what will the country say?" Well, what the country said, what the United States said was, "We've lost again. Our army has lost again to Lee and his army. What is going on in Virginia? What will it take to achieve a victory in the Eastern Theater? What will it take?" The Lynchburg Virginian, a newspaper in Lynchburg, Virginia, observed just a few days after Chancellorsville, "The central figure of this war is beyond all question that of Robert E. Lee. Lee is the exponent of Southern power of command." Here, at the end of this initial year in command, again, not quite a year, but almost a year, the 7 days to Chancellorsville, Lee has gone from a man who raised enormous doubts among many people in the Confederacy to someone who has become the most important person in the Confederacy, more important than Jefferson Davis, he and his army having won another victory. Many historians have argued that Lee's victories were too bloody. He piled up too many casualties. He, in effect, hurt the Confederacy's chances to win independence. And there's no way of getting around how bloody Lee's victories were. We've talked about the 50,000 casualties, another 13,000 at Chancellorsville, 12,000 at Fredericksburg. That's another 25,000. That's 75,000 battle casualties during this period that we're talking about. In an army that numbered 85,000 to 90,000 when he first took command, he's the bloodiest commander on either side during the war. If you don't want to get shot, you don't want to be in Robert E. Lee's army, because your chance will be the best of getting shot if you're in that army among all the armies on either side. But what historians overlook, I think, is by narrowly concentrating on casualties, is the effect that these victories, these bloody victories, had, both on the civilian population in the United States and the civilian population in the Confederacy. Lee is wielding tremendous influence, and he is shaping the war in a way that gives the Confederacy a chance for success by depressing Northern morale to the point that the Northern people might just say, enough. It's not worth it. It's too big a task to try to subdue these rebels. That the bloodiest of all the battles lay just ahead, and we'll turn to that in the rest of Lee's career next time.